because you're jumping back into the gap. I let the coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Leads the country in offensive rebounding.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver, the founder, CEO, and creative mind behind BasketballImmersion.com. This is the podcast where you will hear real basketball coaching conversations. Whether you are a new or experienced coach at any level of basketball, these coaching conversations will give you practical ideas to stimulate your coaching and make what you do even better. Without any more delay, let's share the game. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. Today, I'm super excited to have York Michaels. York is CEO and co-founder of Basketball Skills Development Specialist from Belgium, and he runs elite athletes. And first off, York, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Many people will be wondering, first of all, how we connected and why I'm talking to someone from Belgium. But I can say with all honesty that I've followed your stuff for a while. I'm a big fan. I love the terminology. I love the way that you guys approach things. And personally, I'm excited to learn more, and I know others will be excited to learn more, because this skill development concept that exists in basketball now is obviously, it's big business, but beyond being big business, it's just a really important thing for athletes. And giving people more information about some of the best practices, I feel is really important. So let's start first by talking, York, about elite athletes and what it is and what are some of the goals of this.
Yeah, so we elite athletes, we get kind of like two things. So we get the elite academy. We want to build kind of like a club, but it's more than just basketball. So we try to get our philosophy of how we should work with youth players into, we made it a program, but it's much bigger than just basketball. It's like we get the complete school follow-up system. Players get classroom sessions about stuff like meditation, how to handle social media, much more things. Like, we want to literally get them ready for the next phase in their life. So that's kind of like the latest project we have. And then we elite athletes, we have a training facility where we get a half basketball court and then a room for some strength and conditioning. And in the facility, it's more like for we train one-on-one with the pro players. And then in the evening, the gym is open for everyone who just likes our approach and wants to work out with us.
And we're going to connect some of those ideas about integration of movement and some of the different philosophies that you guys use, which I think are very valuable for people to understand. But let's talk about the beginning of this, because my understanding is that you've built slowly with this and that you actually started with an under 15 group that you kind of built with and experimented with.
Yeah, so it started actually 8 years ago. So everybody was always talking about hard work beats talent when talent fails to work hard. So that was kind of like the most popular quote that day. And we said, like, all right, let's do an experiment. We want to see if we can get kids from 10 years old and we can develop them over 8 years, over 8 year period. In our philosophy, can we get kids from the lowest level to the highest level? So we just went to a club and said, like, this is the experiment that we get. We got one skills trainer, we got one head coach, and we got one strength and conditioning coach. And we went to the team that has the kids played on the lowest level. So you got 8 levels in Belgium, and these kids were really on the 8 level. So they're all great kids, no talent, but great motivated kids. So we went to the parents and we said, we want to do an experiment and see, like, what can we bring from this group? And the parents said, okay, let's go for it. So, but we were still very young. We were like 20 years old, no experience at all with coaching. But we had our philosophy and we just started experimenting with the kids and working more on the fundamentals. For example, for the first 4 years, we did nothing 5-on-5. We only did 1-on-1, 3-on-3, mini side games, stuff like that. And every practice was like, fundamentals was, I think, 80% of the game. And then 20% we worked on basic decision-making stuff with team tactics. And then after practice, we did 15 minutes of core work and stability and stuff like that. And the first 3 years, we got our ass kicked. Like, the team was nowhere. We were beaten on every level. And after 3 years, actually, we got kicked out of the club because the club has something like, they had a new owner and he was like, what are these guys doing? They're not following the same program as all the other teams do. So they said like, yeah, there's no room for you guys. So we started something on our own, and all the kids, they said like, and the parents, they wanted to stay with us. So we kept working with them. And then after the fourth year, we started to add the 5-on-5. So we had a new head coach coming in, and his job was to only learn them the basketball IQ in 5-on-5. And the first year it was, we didn't even made it to the top 24. And then 1 year later, everything changed. So we were the top scoring team in the country. I think we were averaging like 107 points a game. And then the second best defensive team, I think we had 52 points a game against us. And we lost the last game of the season. So we in the final four. So otherwise we would be the champs. But we finished the final four as the second best team. And suddenly like all eyes were on us on the program because everyone was, oh no, it's the same kids. What happened? What is happening? What are they doing?
And that's great. How old were those kids at that time?
That time they were 15. So okay. It was year 5.
15. Okay.
After 5 years, they started to seeing the results from the process.
It's awesome. It's tremendous. And what I love about this and why this is so important for coaches to understand is obviously the long-term development focus versus, in your words, short-term goals of winning games.
Like, yeah, indeed.
This is 100% what we're talking about. If we're talking about, you know, high school basketball in the U.S., we're talking about AAU programs, we're talking about development with a long-term play. And yeah, you're going to lose games at the beginning, but with the focus on development, players will get better. And I assume the other part of this is that you retained a lot of your players within the program.
Yeah.
They didn't drop out.
Mm-hmm. True.
So I think can you talk about that?
Yeah, because it's like for us, winning games has never been a goal. It's an outcome. And for example, also the thing where I'm very proud of is we, from every player in our team, they all play pretty much the same minutes. So we had literally every player of the team has already made over 20 points this season. So one game he starts, next game he starts. So it's the proof that you can, if you get kids who are willing to work hard and you give them the right stuff to work on, that you can get results with every player. And it's also about, I think the biggest thing that separates us with the other teams, I think, is also the mindset. We're huge on teaching the mindset with the kids. They come early. I'll tell you a story about that. Like, our rule is, the first rule is don't be on time, be early. So if you're not 15 minutes early before practice, you are late. That's the first rule. And the second rule is practice starts when the first player arrives. So the first player comes in, for example, like an hour before practice, then we start doing one-on-one on the court, then the next player jumps in. And that's how we can create more length in our practices. So actually, like 2 seasons ago, this was getting out of hand. So we were renting a gym from a school, and the principal of the school, he walked in like 90 minutes before practice, and there were already 8 guys on the court. And we're already like doing form shooting, and he was like, oh, what is this? This is not okay. You're not renting the gym already. So we had like a warning, but we just, instead of like keeping the kids on the street, we just said like, come to the gym and get some extra working. So the next time he came in again, 6 or 7 guys were already working out an hour before practice actually started. And so we got even kicked out of the school for that. But for me, it's cool. You see the mindset, if you can get kids to, we call it the Kaizen mindset. So every day you want to do something to get better at. It can be small things like watch film or watch tape of your best player or do a workout at home or anything you want. But every day you got to do something to get better. And all our players, they believe in that. And I think that's the biggest difference between us and the other teams is the mindset is completely different.
Well, can you talk about some of the things? I mean, the Kaizen mindset, love that. Love the mentality that you built and the mindset that you built. But what led to that mindset in the players? Like what connected for them that made them self-motivated? Because ultimately, that's the best thing that we could do as a coach is make it player-led, that they're self-motivated. We're not the motivator. They're the motivator. They're there. And we're there as someone who's aiding their development, not pushing their development.
Yeah. I think it's because the Kaizen mindset was always the startup of the elite athletes. We had the same mindset, and I think we lead by example with our coaching staff. And I think that's the biggest reason that players just want to follow with us. They take over our habits and they make it their own. So, and we strongly want our players to dream big, and everything is possible if you work hard. And we want to focus on the things that you can control. And the thing you can control is always like how much effort you want to put into this. So I think if you get a couple guys of the team who were on the same page, then it's easier for the rest to follow.
Well, and the great part too for your philosophy is that you were patient. You were all understanding. And I assume this was a sell to the parents and to the players that we're going to build slowly. And in the long run, we're going to be better because of it, rather than focusing on the short-term gains. And can you talk a little bit, like, was that actually you sitting down with parents and explaining it to players, or was it just something that was understood?
No, actually, it's one of the struggle points we have right now. So we started with our academy, a new team. So we get an under-16 team for the first year now. And the thing is, like, in Belgium, you need to finish first or second in the first round to make it to the top 24 teams. And we're not going to make it. And some of the parents right now are like, oh, no, we're not going to make it to the top 24. Like, people are laughing with us. They're making jokes. The system is not good. But it's like, I had a conversation with them yesterday. It's like, our goal is not to win games. Our goal is to build players in the long run. And if you want to, we can develop them to have real quick results, but it's not going to help them in the long run. It's the process. And right now we're not good enough yet, but to make it to the top 24. So you can't expect them to do that already. The results will come if you put in the work. And if we call it trust the process, like, you need to have faith in it, and it's step by step, but it's long term. And that's the problem, I think, with most coaches. They're only focused on next weekend because they want to win as much games as possible. But our goal is to get guys in the NBA. We don't have Belgium guys in the NBA, and that's the thing where we aim for. And it's not going to work if you have short-term goals.
Well, that's tremendous. And of note for people is that, you know, you guys work with pro players as well. This isn't just youth development, and that this Kaizen and this philosophy on the individual focus and on their overall holistic development, that applies to pro players, not just youth players as well. Can you talk a little bit about the pro athlete component of this too?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that I learned in 8 years working with pro players is the secret is in the basics. And I think pro players still come for me to become better at the basics. So that's the thing, like, we want to put, for example, in the academies. Our goal is to get them, we call it basic amazing. You need to become amazing at the basics, and that's going to help you in the long run. And that's the thing I think with the pros is what they're missing in their own teams is everything is focused on 5-on-5 and getting ready for next game. But you need to, can never work enough on the fundamentals. It should be also, even if you're a pro player, it should still be in your routine that you work weekly on just the basics of the game. I think that's the biggest reason why players still come for me is because there is no skill development in professional basketball.
Well, I love that term, basic.
Basic amazing.
Love that. Yeah, that's great. And so you did mention previously too that, say, for that early group, 80% of practice was fundamentals. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know also you're a believer in block versus random practice and understanding those different components of that in terms of skill acquisition and motor learning. So can you frame for us a little bit of our understanding of what you mean by basic, amazing, and fundamentals? Are we talking on air? Are we talking 1-on-0? Are we talking, you know, random practice? What are we talking about when we're talking about basic, amazing?
Yeah. It's funny because I've been doing a lot of research about block practice versus random practice. It started with the NBA guy, Alex Arama. So he's huge on the random practice, and we had multiple discussions about it. So I started experimenting with it and reading some more from, for example, like Brian McCormick, his books and stuff like that. And I think practice should be a mix. That's what I feel is, for example, I think I'm a big fan of Drew Hanlon, NBA skills trainer. I've been following his work for years, but he's all about block practice. And Then you have the opposite is, I think, is Brian McCormick is all about random practice and random games. But I think it should be a mix. What I see is right now with decision-making drills for teaching new skills is the decision-making, in my opinion, how should I say it? Sometimes it's quantity above quality. So what I think is block practice can get you really good in the details of teaching moves, and it can get you really good in, as coaching also, in focusing on the smaller parts of the movements. But I think the next step after block practice, where you do moves one on zero, should be adding the decision making. Because what I see is I've seen tons of kids who have the craziest fundamentals, but they cannot do it in a game because they don't have the basketball IQ to read the defender or to make the right decisions. So I think decision making is definitely an important part. But in my opinion, it should be 50-50. That's how I teach it. For example, if you have my practices, I always work on one topic, one head topic. And then I have three things that I work every day on. So it's ball handling. Every day I do 3 to 5 minutes ball handling, not longer than that. After that, I do finishing for 20 minutes. And then I do form shooting for 20 minutes. So my warm-up is 45 minutes every day. And it's always those three things, because I think those are the three most important things in basketball. I want my players to handle the ball, even if they're the big guy or point guard, it doesn't matter. Everybody should be really comfortable handling the ball. I want my players to be able to finish in every situation in the paint with every hand perfectly. And the third part is shooting is for me the most important skill in basketball. So I want every player to become a great shooter. So those three things are my warm-up for 45 minutes. And then I work on one topic. And if I work, for example, the topic can be, let's say, creating on the catch, then it would be 30 minutes rather block practice where I really try to focus on the details. And then 30 minutes there we work on decision-making, small-sided games, where we create a situation where they need to use the moves that they just learned. So that's kind of like my philosophy for practice.
No, that's great. I mean, it's definitely what I believe in terms of a drill. A drill must have a connection ultimately to the game. And that's what you're talking about is that, you know, and I love that obviously you take that part at the end of practice and put it in the context of the game for the athlete so they know why they're working on it. But that gives us a great picture of kind of what your workout is and how it flows. And that's really good because I was told to ask about your pre-practice routine. And that's what you're talking about, the ball handling, the finish, and the form shooting, right? Yeah. What age do you start people at shooting in terms of that? Like, is Belgium modified for the ages or how does that work for you?
You mean for form shooting?
For any type of shooting. Yeah, like prepubescent, do you start focus on form shooting? Or is that something as a, because really the whole basics of what you're saying is that, and I 100% agree, basketball is ultimately a late development sport. We can develop some ball mastery and different things at a really young age, but how good they're going to get is in those later years after puberty or whenever it may be. So can you talk about a little bit about when you start shooting with young athletes?
Yeah. So I'm only working with kids over 12.
Okay.
But for me, it starts with my guys under 14, I rather focus more on the finishing and the ball handling because I think those are in the basic footwork. I think those are the three things that I focus the most on. And with my under 16 team, it starts with the form shooting. That's the biggest part in the focus. But I think with under 14, I would still focus more on finishing and getting that touch, right hand, left hand, stuff like that, different situations, different kind of footwork. And just making sure the handles are tight. But I think from an age of under 16, you should start to focus on getting the form.
Well, and I love that because it fits into your philosophy in general, which is building slowly, is that, again, we can't teach it all at once. Like, it's too often we try and teach everything at once in one practice. And even the concept of you saying you have one topic after that routine is tremendous. And I love that mindset for player development. How often would you work with an athlete? Would it be daily? Is it weekly? What is it in terms of your program?
If I can choose?
Yeah,
daily for sure. Like as much as possible. So we got a new concept with our academy guys. Is we call it 24/7. So it means like I give every player a golden key of the gym. And we call it like the Mamba mentality. I want my players to, they can send me a message any time of the day. So if they say like, I want to work out before school at 6, I'm there at 6. If they say like in the weekend, can we get a workout at even in the night or something? I don't care. I will be there. But every player has a key because I want them to come as much as possible. So I think, yeah, you can never work enough on your game. There's always something that you can do. It doesn't even have to be on the court, but off the court. Again, guys and mindset, try to do something to get better every day.
Well, it's tremendous. And this is a great segue into what we're going to frame for people, because I don't want them to get that impression that's only basketball in your program, as you mentioned already, because really the unique part and what really attracted to me what you guys do is that there's a lot of synergy with what you do and then approaching it from a multi-sport perspective is that It's not just basketball. You're focusing on movement. You're focusing on different things that connect the basketball player to their body and understanding of their body. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. And also it's not only even that. I never believed in the system of having one coach for like one team, because we expect the coach to be good at everything. And the kids are going to become good in what's the expertise of the coach. So what we do with our academy is, for example, we have 8 coaches and every coach only needs to do what he's the best at. So we got a defensive coach and we got one guy who's only teaching a 2-man game. We got one guy who's only teaching shooting. We got a movement coach, then a skills trainer, strength and conditioning coach, physio, and then the head coach was really good at the tactics. But I strongly believe in the system of we need coaches to specialize instead of like doing everything. It's much better if you can make a small team of coaches and everybody can just focus on their best topic.
Well, that's great. Can you talk a little bit about what Olivier Goodluck does with some of the movement training and how that connects to the basketball?
A quick interruption to this week's episode to let you know what you're missing if you are not currently a member of BasketballImmersion.com. Basketball Immersion is one-stop shopping for video learning to stimulate your basketball coaching using evidence-based practices. Watch hundreds of videos covering BDT shooting, zero-second skill training, how we teach using small-sided games and a games approach to coaching, as well as team concepts and systems like trail trap, flow offense, two-sided fast break, and much, much more. NCAA, NBA, pro, high school, and youth coaches are amongst the thousands of coaches who are a part of our community. Go to BasketballImmersion.com today to stimulate your basketball coaching.
Yeah, so he works a lot with the Fighting Monkey. So it's kind of athletic development. So he thinks more outside the box. So he sees like, what if our players would be really good in, for example, like dancing or coordination or things like that. So he's stepping away from the traditional programs and creating more like the ultimate athlete instead of like focusing only on basketball players just needs this and this and this. The kid's also more creative. Like he's a lot about more the connection between brain and how the body works, more building chaos situations where movements, there is not just one solution. There are multiple ways how to move with it. So he's trying to make our players more creative by giving them different kind of challenges in multiple sports.
Well, that's tremendous. And it's something that we all have to keep in mind. I mean, for the young athletes, and so many of the studies obviously paint the picture that a multi-sport athlete just has less injury, a better overall experience, and better development. And, you know, all those things that you guys do paint that picture as well. So that's wonderful. Can we get into a little bit as well, some of the mindset of the positionless basketball? Like, you're not focused on positions at all. And that's part of the beauty of your system is that it is truly building a player to be the best version of themselves, regardless of what position they ultimately get put into.
Yeah, I think the basketball is like slowly changing into, in the long run, maybe even positionless basketball. So I think if you want to teach the basketball of the future, it starts already right now. So with our players, we don't want to put them into boxes like you're a point guard, you're a shooting guard, you're a big man. No, we want our players to be able to do everything. That's why we don't make differences between definitely not at the young age between what we teach them. So our big man, they also needs to do like the pick and roll reads. He also needs to do like the ball handling, finishing. I want them to have the players have the full package. And it shows also with the games, it's much easier. Like if every player who gets a rebound can immediately be the point guard, it makes the system just so much easier to play basketball. And I think that's also like how basketball will be played in the future. Like you're going to have 7-footers who are going to be point guards. Yeah, you need to be ready for the future. And basketball is getting more and more creative. And you wanted to have creative players. That's our goal.
Which is great. And I'll follow up on that too. And well, maybe let's ask it now. So what are some things that develop creativity in players? Because when I watch some of your videos and some of the different things like that, I get that impression that your players have some freedom to be themselves. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I love that as well. So what are some of the things that you do to foster creativity within an athlete?
Yeah. First of all, I want my players to fail in practice. So I strongly recommend failing. I want players to try new things. And for example, like if a player does a new move and he shoots an air ball, I'm just going to stand up, clap and say like, I'm really be positive about it. And I think that's a big difference because most coaches would say like, ah, no, it's a bad shot. Or no, I want my players to feel that definitely in practice, you need to have the freedom to fuck up. So we do lots of mini side games, a lot of one-on-one also. And I think one-on-one is one of the most important drills. Why? Because you can try new things. And if you fuck up, nobody's going to be mad at you. If you play 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 or 5-on-5 and you try a new move and you shoot an air ball, the other guys are going to be like, dude, what you doing? Or they're not going to like it. But in 1-on-1, you can try everything you want and it's just for you, you know? So every practice has at least 20 minutes of 1-on-1. And I think also very important, the last drill that I finish every practice is we do 10 minutes of 3-on-3-on-3 or 4-on-4 games. And the coach cannot talk. So it's 10 minutes freelance play. And the rule is I want my players to constantly communicate, but the coach cannot say anything. And then after the 10 minutes, I come in and I say like, what did we did good? What could do better? Stuff like that. But during the 10 minutes, it's just the players. So they can be as creative as they want. They can do anything as they want. And for me, it shows that it works. You create players will become the next coaches because they can coach each other. They're constantly communicating and they solve problems on their own. They're not looking for every problem to the coach, like what went wrong. They try to think for themselves. And that's one of the drills I strongly believe in is you need to give your players the freedom to experiment.
This is wonderful. And I mean, I love how you said that too, about one-on-one, that when you play one-on-one, like, you're not accountable to a teammate, so you can truly be yourself. And that's great. And this may or may not be, but Belgium soccer made that switch a while ago. I read a lot about that they went to a lot of one-on-one at the youth level. Is that the same idea that Belgium soccer saw too? Is that one-on-one fosters more individual skill development, but two, you don't have to be accountable to anyone, so you can be creative. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I don't really have the idea from soccer, more from like experimenting, but I think soccer is definitely in Europe. It's like they're 5 steps ahead of basketball because they have much more resources and they have much more options. Soccer is huge in here. So what I do is I try to visit a lot of the soccer academies and try to see how they work. And I got a lot of great ideas definitely for them that I try to apply in basketball. Because I think soccer, for example, is definitely also very good in creating like the random games and the decision making. And yeah, they're just on another level instead of basketball. Like it's so I think sometimes it's good to go and see how other sports are working. And there's always something that you can try to apply in basketball.
No, it's so true. And I actually have a lot of interaction through the basketball immersion with soccer coaches, rugby coaches, lacrosse coaches, different invasion sport games that you know, the coaches connect with me about ideas and share ideas. So it's great. And you know, the other part about one-on-one is that they get decisions. That you're trying to develop their skills, but then they get to work on the decisions with those skills. So do you use constraints sometimes within the one-on-one, or what types of different one-on-ones do you use to be able to foster some of that development?
Yeah. So for example, like yesterday we had, the focus was everything from attacking the closeout. So we did like 30 minutes of every type of footwork that you can create. If the defense does this, this is the best action. If the defense help you go into that second move, stuff like that for 30 minutes. And then we create the same situation. So now we're going to add a defender and then we mix it up. For example, like sometimes we put the defender a little bit far away. I call it the 1 second advantage. So it's, we make the closeout a little bit longer at the start. So the offensive player get a little bit more time to read the defender. And then we mix it up. We bring the, we make it a mini closeout, stuff like that. Or today, for example, we're going to work on the flow dribble. So it's going to be, I think you call it the skate dribble.
Yes.
Yeah. So then, for example, it's going to be, again, 30 minutes where we work on different reads, different options. And I make it a little bit more, I say, if the defense does this, this is the best option, but it's with the imaginary defense for the first 30 minutes. And then we create the same situation. So now it's one-on-one where you have to make a read from the flow dribble.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's great. That gives us a real good perspective on what it is. And you also mentioned that, you know, you spend time with your athletes watching film. And this is something I've noticed from your Instagram as well, is that you're big into film study and big into film study, particularly with individual players, understanding other individual players and what they do. Can you discuss that a little bit about practically how do you use that for your athletes?
Yeah. I think watching film is one of the most important things. You can say to an athlete like 25 times, like, yeah, your spacing is not good, for example. But if you can show it one time in a video, like right here, you should be a little bit more in the corner. Because a lot of the times, like even 1 meter can make a big difference. You only have to show it once to your players and they get it. Instead of like always talking to them, they learn much quicker by watching tape. So we do it in two ways. We can do the tape, for example, for the team tactics, but we can also do the tape more individually where we see on the skills. So we will work more on the, how was your decision making? How was the details on the skill moves? So it's kind of like two types of videos that we do. The skill work videos I do privately with them. So I send them the clips just on Facebook, like one-on-one, and then I add my comments. And then we try to do once a week the video session of the team.
No, that's tremendous. I mean, so valuable for a player, obviously, to see not just themselves, but experts. And in some cases, novices do move. So it gives them a real good perspective of where they need to go and the task representation and everything else that goes with that. So
yeah, maybe good. Even one more thing about it. Like yeah. We put also the full game on YouTube. And I want my players to make their own analyze of the game. So they watch their game anytime they want. And then I want them to send like a full description on what they think that they did good on the game, what they should have done better, stuff like that. It's also a way like you can use the tape also to let them think about themselves instead of like the coach always saying like what was good, what was wrong.
No, that's cool. That's really cool. And I've been told to ask too about your holistic approach relative to homework traffic light system. Is that something that you still use and you still do? Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds really unique.
Yeah, so the thing is we want to work with experts. So school is still the main priority, but we're not school experts. So we get two people who were doing full-time follow-up system for the academy. So it works two ways. The first way is their points get, evaluated. So we got green, orange, and red. Green is like the perfect athlete. He can do the full program. Orange is like, oh, there might be a problem. It's not that bad yet. And then we try to give a solution, help them out. For example, it can be extra private one-on-one session to get the schoolwork back 100%. And then the last part is the red zone is if there's really a problem, then, for example, he got, instead of 5 practices, he can only do 3. And 2 other practices, he needs to go and work one-on-one on his schoolwork. But it's not just saying like evaluating the scores. It's all about giving them the tools. Like we give workshops to them, like how do you make your to-do list? How do you plan your week? What is the most efficient way to study? We give them stuff like biorhythm, because I think the biggest problem with the youth is their cell phone, the smartphone, because kids, they don't sleep anymore 10 hours or 8 hours a night because they're always on their phone. So we give them a workshop about that. We change their habits on their smartphone. We also have an app where we can see how many hours a day that they spend on what apps on their phone. So we try to, yeah, it's more about giving them the tools to do perfectly in school instead of like just be the teacher who says like, yeah, it's good or it's not good. We want to help them to perform great in basketball and in school. But school is always the main priority because in the long run, you need good grades.
Well, the other part about what you're saying is that you're not just saying, hey, listen, you're in trouble or you're doing poorly. You're giving them an outlet to be able to get better in terms of different resources you have available, whether it's classes or, as you said, the teachers that you have accessible to you to be able to help them. And that, what a great framework for all clubs. I mean, ultimately, again, we're dealing with human beings. We're dealing with people that are still evolving in the world, and putting them in situations where they can understand themselves better is outstanding. So you also said something about don't be a PlayStation coach. What does that mean? Yeah. Don't be a PlayStation coach.
So I get this one from Alex. So he once came with the term PlayStation coach. And I really, I absolutely love the terminology. It's what I mean with that is a PlayStation coach is the coach who is on the side, like he's constantly yelling what the players need to do. So he's like, pass, we do this, you do that, shoot, attack. And he's like, he wants to have control over his players all the time. And I think that is like definitely for youth basketball, it's so bad because there is no decision making anymore for the kids. There is no creativity anymore for the kids. There is no learning anymore because the coach is like telling them everything to do. So in my opinion, like the best coaches, they should be able to sit on the bench during a game and just relax and watch the game and maybe say small things like when you do the subs, for example, or maybe one of them call a timeout and give them some orders. But if you're constantly yelling during the game, I think you're not doing a good job as a coach because it means like your players are not good enough to make the decisions on their own. So you should change your practices because the ultimate goal should be that the players become have the same knowledge as you. That's what we strongly believe in is you want to create player coaches and not players who are just, I don't know how you say it in English, but players who are constantly looking at the coach and the coach is like the big boss and the players just need to listen. I don't believe in the system.
Well, and you can tell by everything you've said so far, how you build that and you build the opposite mentality for your players and for your coaches involved. And I couldn't agree more that guidance hinders play. And that's really what we want. We want players to play free. So, you know, you mentioned this already and I want to circle back because you said that one of the big focuses in your program is the mindset of a player. And you even go to the point in terms of recruiting athletes for your program or the athletes that you choose to be in your program that in some cases you'll take mindset over physical build or physical attribute, right? That's what we're talking about in terms of because you think long-term, someone with a mindset will get better. Now, I understand you have a test for this that you do and that it was shared with Greg Popovich in Belgrade.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. So it's kind of like you're going to stretch out your arms and you're just going to stand like this and you're just going to hold it. And we do the test for like 7 minutes. So you just need to stand and keep your arms up. And the only thing we say is like, just keep your hands up. Don't let them drop. That's the only goal. But what you see is like, after 10 seconds, your shoulder starts to burn and everybody just wants to drop the shoulders. But if you stand for this like 7 minutes or even longer, like it's not like your arms are going to fall off. It's not like you're going to get sore or you're going to get an injury. It's just you versus you. You know, it's like, do you find a way to bite through the being uncomfortable and just stand like this? So we were at the NBA Without Borders camp. And the players, the mindset was not great. Like we had a lot of the kids were the most talented players, but they were, in my opinion, not really the hardest workers. So we wanted to do this test and like 90% just failed after 1 minute. And we were talking about this with Popovich and he said like, all right, I want to do the test. So we did it again and he just stand there for 7 minutes. And he was like, if I can do it, like, why can't you guys do it? Like, it's just a question about how bad you want it. It's find a way to, bite through it. And that's one of the drills we do almost every week with our players is we want them to be so mentally strong that if you're uncomfortable, it doesn't matter anymore. Like we bite through it. And it's an easy test for us to see what kind of mentality you have. So for example, like what we do also with It's the first test for if players come for tryouts for our academy. It's the first thing we do. And it's all, you can immediately see, like, last year we had one kid who was, like, standing completely still for, like, 7 minutes with, like, his eyes were, like, locked in. So he didn't even touch the ball and he was already picked. Like, every coach said, we want that kid because that kid got the right mindset. So, yeah, we strongly believe in that for sure. Really cool, Popovich, yeah.
Yeah, so Popovich actually did it. Did he do it with the players or did he do it in front of the players?
Yeah, with the players. He did it in front of the players. And he was just sending a message like, if I can do it, then why can't you guys do it? It was cool.
That's a great story and a great connection to, you know, being uncomfortable is okay, but, you know, it's that grit, that perseverance, that mindset, all those things that ultimately are going to determine your success in so many ways. So, no, that's awesome. So, what is the structure for your pro players? Maybe as kind of a final thing, is the structure for your pro players, is it similar to what you talked about already in terms of the youth development?
Yeah, actually it is. Like, I think the only thing what I see with the pro players is I can be less creative with them because they're not getting the creativity with their team. So that's maybe the only difference between the youth and the pro players is I know they can do much more than they can show because basketball definitely in Belgium is players are put in the box. Like you have to stand in the corner and you need to do the catch and shoot and they take away all the creativity from the players. So I need to think a little bit more inside the box. So for example, last year I had an American guy and the coach knew he was training X-ray with me and he literally called me and he said, I'm never going to let them do more than one dribble in the game. So everything you do needs to be with one dribble. So that's the way a lot of the pro coaches think, because I think coaches definitely in Europe, they want to make it more about them, about it's my system and we're going to run the way I see it instead of like using the creativity of the players and making it more like give them options to read. I think that's the biggest difference also between maybe the States and Europe in the way the kids play. Kids are much more creative, I think, in the States because they get more freedom. And in Belgium, they try to take away the freedom. And that's why I'm a lot of the times pretty limited with what I teach to the pro players because it has no point. In the beginning, I was like, oh, yeah, you can do this and you can that. And I come to see the games and then I know they can do it, but they're just not getting the freedom from the coach. So it's, with the pros, it's always a little bit more limited.
Well, and I'm glad you said that because I think too often all of us as coaches look and see what a pro trainer does with pros. Oh, and says, why we should be doing that. We should be. Anyone that's listening to this podcast is going to get a completely different picture, which is what I love, is about like the long, slow build for a youth player is completely different than focusing on what a pro player does well so they can keep making money. Right. And that's a completely different deal. And I'm so happy you made those points and made those connections because I don't think there's anything more valuable than people understanding that as well. So is there anything else you'd like to highlight about what you guys do and how you do it? We're going to direct people most immediately to your Instagram, which is at JOERIK at York. And you know, I encourage everyone to go follow and you already have a tremendous following, but I think more coaches need to follow you and learn more about what you guys do. But is there anything else you want to leave us with in terms of some thoughts about development?
Oh, maybe one advice that I have for coaches is you need to create the habit of becoming a better coach. And I think like the problem is always time for everyone. Nobody gets time. But if you can create a habit, like if you, for example, like listen to a podcast when you're in the car or when you watch at least 10 minutes a day a YouTube video or maybe read a book when you're on the toilet. It doesn't matter, but you need to create some kind of habit as a coach that you can do at least 10 minutes every day in learning new things. I think if you can do that as a coach, that in the long run, it's going to build up. But I think the biggest problem with coaches is that almost nobody wants to put in the work to becoming a better coach. Basketball is always evolving. So as a coach, you should be always evolving too. And the best coaches are just the best researchers in a lot of the times. Like you need to pick the brain from other trainers and learn as much about the game as possible.
Well, what a great note to finish on because you've done a great job sharing today. And I think so many coaches will be stimulated by your thinking and hopefully help them reflect on what they do and how they do it. So thank you for taking the time. And I know you and I will keep in touch as we go forward over the next whole bunch of years of our basketball lives.
All right, cool. All right. Thank you, man.
Thank you. To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.